left a light on, digging through the house of ancient memory. Somewhere, the pink perfume of someone else's hair, and I could see you standing there, standing in your parents' house, just your mother's girl, in a morning tub with your matted curls, my teenaged hands on your soapy skin, fingers in the leather. I swore to myself that I'd always remember everything. Somewhere I left a light on thick behind the door, but we bury this away. Let it carry on in ghosts. I try to keep these moments, squirrel them away. I tried a thousand ways, I thought a thousand times of stolen wine in backyard tents and my brother's songs on old cassettes. I made it up as I got it wrong. I was hoping you'd help me along with the life of love that lay ahead, but it was only you in a childhood bed, and I named your breasts, stamped your skin, counted moles like I was saving ten, just a battle time in my lazy head that I thought would not surrender. I swore to myself that I'd always remember everything. Smile that I promise to love you forever. I was acting my age.
That's Vancouver's singer-songwriter, actor, and member of folk collective The Fugitives, Adrian Glynn, with Acting My Age from his latest solo album, Ghostlight Sessions, a homemade album of acoustic tunes recorded by Ghostlight on an empty theatre stage in Kamloops, BC, at the start of the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, and it's now available for digital download on Bandcamp. To learn more about the new album, we're pleased to welcome Adrian Glynn to Folk Roots Radio. It's great to have you join us today.
It's great to be here. It's a beautiful day in Vancouver.
So your life must have really have been turned upside down when you were in, I think, rehearsals in Kamloops, and then suddenly everything had to shut down?
Yeah, we were literally on day one of rehearsal of a show called Chelsea Hotel, The Songs of Leonard Cohen, which is a show we created here in Vancouver back in 2012, and it's been all over the country, and it hadn't been done in a couple of years. So we were about to start a new run at the Western Canada Theatre in Kamloops. And then COVID happened, of course. And so, yeah, day one, we're halfway through rehearsal and the artistic director had to come in, and he was quite emotional and basically said, yeah, guys, we can't do it. So what happened is, you know, we were mostly Vancouver actors being put up in Kamloops. So a lot of us had, you know, had rented out our homes or, you know, didn't have anywhere to go back to. So the theater was very generous. They let us stay in our accommodations. They paid our full contracts out. And so we were just ended up being kind of there in Kamloops. And so I ended up getting the key off the artistic director to the theater and ended up just making an album there on the stage with the time I had, which, you know, was one way to pass the COVID times.
Now, these were songs that I think you'd written and had been sitting waiting to see whether they would appear on another solo album or perhaps a Fugitives album. Is that how things were?
Yeah. So in some cases, I think the oldest song on the record is probably about 10 years old. but they're all just acoustic songs. Like, I've made three solo records now with varying degrees of production. And I've never, well, certainly not since my very first days as a singer-songwriter, have I made a record that was just very stripped down, kind of just me and the guitar. And this seemed like a really good opportunity to do that. So these songs all really lent themselves well to just being carried by, you know, one guitar and one voice with maybe a couple little bells and whistles added here and there.
It's pretty remarkable because it does have that feel. You know, when you know the story of the fact that, you know, you were on stage and, you know, getting ready to, you know, to put on a full production, that all got shut down. You had access to the studio, and then, you know, the idea of the ghost light, which I think is the light that remains on in the theater after everyone leaves.
Yeah, exactly. So a ghost light is, it, if you picture like a tall, skinny, just pole with a light bulb on top that sits on a stand, that's basically a ghost light. And so any theater, you know, the stage manager will leave this light on the middle of the stage, and it's to keep people from, you know, at the end of the night tripping over cables or whatever. So there's always like a light source, but there's a long superstition attached to it, which is that theaters are generally haunted by mischievous ghosts. So the ghost light is also to kind of to light the space to keep them from getting up to mischief. So it was quite a striking image when I started to think about it that, you know, our theater had shut down, and certainly theaters around the world all shut down. And it was amazing to just think of all these little ghost lights and all these theaters across the world with empty seats. And it just kind of gave me chills to think about that. And that certainly is how it felt to make the record in that space with, you know, like 900 empty seats out there and just kind of singing into this sort of abyss. It was kind of strange and kind of amazing.
You give me goosebumps, you know, when you were saying that, because the album has a really intimate feel. I mean, it's stripped down in such a beautiful way. There is a remarkable feel to this, and it's interesting. You know, you said, well, you know, I'm just going to put this out on Bandcamp. I'm not going to make any, you know, vinyl or CD versions of this album. But it does feel very special at the same time. I wonder if that is how you feel about it.
Yeah, I think so. As I say, it was kind of, I mean, that was a profound, well, we're living in a profound time still, aren't we? But in those early weeks when everything was so confusing, we didn't know what was going on, this was solace to me. I feel so grateful that I was even able to do this because, you know, my girlfriend who's also in the Chelsea Hotel show, her name's Marlene Guinader, and she lives sort of between Vancouver and New York. So she had just arrived from New York, kind of just got out of there right before things got really bad. And so we'd be, you know, working on whatever projects all day. And then we'd come back to our room at night and check in with the news and, you know, see that things in New York were horrible. And so it just felt like to have something to focus on that, you know, that was very personal, very quiet and very safe, and also a creative expression just felt really, like soulless. It was not soulless, soulless. So it was special, yeah.
So tell us about that first song, Acting My Age. That's a beautiful song. I think it's the first song actually on the album.
Yeah, that kicks off the record. So that's one of the older ones. That song's got to go back about 7 or 8 years, I would say. And yeah, it just never... In the records I'd made since then, I always liked the song. It just never fit with the aesthetic of the other records that I made. So, I'd always wanted to put it on some record. So that song is about. So I think a lot of people have this. I have a very strong connection between my sense of smell and my memory, and you know, and I realized this many years ago, and so I started doing this silly thing where if I went traveling to another country that, you know, that I knew was going to be kind of like a life experience, I would buy a deodorant in that country and use it for those few weeks of travel, and then I'd bring it home, and then I put it in a box, never to be smelled again until some day in the future when it's like a photo album of scents, I guess, and it'll be interesting to see what memories get conjured up when I smell those. But so, yeah, so all I have to say is that I link memory to smell very closely. And so I had this experience a few years ago where there was this shampoo that my very first love when I was about 15 years old used to use. And I never knew anyone else that used this shampoo. So I'm standing in line in a London Drugs, and some woman walks by, and I smelt that scent. And I had not smelt that scent since I was 15, and it just immediately just brought back these vivid images from that time in my life. And I was like, oh, that's so strange. And so, yeah, so the song ends up being about that time and about, you know, the things we say to our first love, you know, that we'll be together forever and all this kind of stuff. And that's why it's called Acting My Age. I remember my dad even like telling me, this is your first love, you know, you'll have lots in your life. And me being so offended and being like, no, this is the love of my life. You don't understand. So it's kind of about all that.
Now, there's 9 tracks on the album. I'm curious as to how many other tracks you considered before you pulled these together.
Not that many. Because I was up in Kamloops, I didn't have, you know, all the instruments I usually have kicking around. I just had an acoustic guitar. There's certainly a few piano tunes I could have included because I write a little bit on the piano as well. But and there was a piano there, actually. But I thought, you know what? I like the idea of just setting up one microphone and singing and playing, you know, simultaneously, like not overdubbing the vocals, just capturing a live performance. So, yeah, I think there's only one song that I cut. Like I had one that, you know, once I started listening back, it just didn't quite fit with the others as well. So, but yeah, so What Made the Album is just about what I recorded, except for one.
You know, and it has that feel. It very much has that feel of the, you know, Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska, you know, that just really spare feel to it. I think it's a beautiful album, and I certainly want to encourage as many of our listeners as possible to check it out. Now, I want to go back to the album and play another song. We're going to play Hammer, because this is a take on If I Had a Hammer, but with different lyrics. And I think it does speak to a certain type of activism that definitely exists in the social media age, which is the sitting in your armchair and saying yay every time somebody does something. But can you tell us a little bit more about this song?
Yeah, so I wrote this one a little over a year ago. I had started doing a program, which has now become pretty well known since this, since the Black Lives Matter recent uprising, or whatever we want to call that. It's a program called Me and White Supremacy. And so when I heard about this, you know, I at this point just thought white supremacy only meant, you know, like the Ku Klux Klan and stuff like that. It's a book now. It started off as like an Instagram challenge from the woman that created it, Layla F. Saad, just to her followers as a daily journaling exercise, basically to look at your own intrinsic prejudices as white people and white passing people and journal about them. And she had found that it had such a profound effect on all the people that engaged in it that she made it a public sort of like book kind of course thing. And so I started doing this, and yeah, it was truly, truly amazing. I've always been, I think, you know, like probably a lot of us white Canadians would describe ourselves as pretty, pretty liberal, pretty open-minded, but the fact remains we have our privileges and we have our ingrained prejudices, whether we care to admit it or not. And so this was very eye-opening to me and the beginning of a great education. And so this song came out of that. And it's, yeah, sort of a satirical look at, slacktivism and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's, I should also mention, it's not meant to, I think Pete Seeger is incredible. So it's not meant to be like, you know, saying anything bad about him at all. It's just kind of, I took that song and kind of ran with it.
It's a great song. Let's listen to it just now. This is Adrian Glynn with Hammer from his wonderful new album, Ghostlight Sessions. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
If I had a hammer, I'd keep it in the closet. I'd keep it in the ether with my thoughts and my prayers. I'd read about the marches, like I'm on Facebook. I'd keep my hands clean, I'd keep my hands fair. If I had a bell, I'd leave it on the mantle. I'd stuff it with velvet and shine up the brass. I'd have my friends over, talk about TV. Hey, what's with the bell? Nobody asks. 'Cause I am a white man, and I choose my causes. And then in the evening, I go home to my bed. And I dream about danger, I dream about warning. Wake up in the morning with a clear head. History, I keep it in the basement, I keep it in the schoolyard, buried under a tree. And I'd write a new story, put it in a movie, make a little money, 'cause life ain't free. Yeah, I am a white man, I choose my causes. And then in the evening, I go home to my bed. And I dream about danger, I dream about warning. Wake up in the morning with a clear. Say, I like my family, I like employment, I like my head down, I hear better that way. Yeah, I keep my head down, I get by that way. Love between brothers and my sisters.
That's Adrian Glynn with Hammer from his new album. It's entitled Ghostlight Sessions. This album has a wonderful backstory because it was recorded on stage under a ghostlight in a deserted theater at the start of the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. I'm so pleased that Adrian Glynn is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio, chatting about the album. Now, as well as being a singer-songwriter, he is also an actor. And actually, one of his movies, a psychological thriller entitled Volition, I think is still out there now, isn't it, Adrian?
It actually just came out to the public on Friday.
Right. We're in the COVID-19 pandemic, and how can people actually watch this?
It's on video on demand now, so... It's available as a rental on video on demand. So through all the big platforms, Amazon's video on demand, Google Play, Apple TV, and then a lot of smaller ones like Fandango and stuff like that. It had quite a long life in the festival circuit. It went all over the world in the past year and a half to various festivals and won quite a lot of awards. It's had a really great life so far. But yeah, we're super excited that it's like, finally I can tell my friends, okay, you can go watch it. It's finally public, which is great.
And I think this movie was produced by the Smith Brothers, is that right?
Yeah, the Smith Brothers, who are old friends of mine, actually. I went to high school with both of them.
Yeah, and we should mention that you actually picked up a Best Actor Award as well for this, I think, at the Italy's Ostia Festival, right?
I did, yeah, which was a great honor. And yeah, there's been couple nominations here and there, and the film's won a ton of awards, just Jeff, in every department. Everyone really worked really hard on this. It was a big passion project, and it turned out better than we could have ever imagined.
So let's talk about the acting side of your career, because you appeared in The Once, which is the that was the wonderful Glenn Hansard movie. And I think you actually shared the stage with him, I think, a while ago, didn't you? As an opening act.
Yeah. Yeah. And more fun than I did a show with Glenn in New York, kind of like a charity fundraiser. And this was years ago. This was like 2012. And we ended up, I like this story actually. So that charity show was fine. Then we ended up in a pub somewhere in the Lower East Side after hours. And so he had a friend, he kept it open, and it was just like five of us in there or something. And Glenn and I were getting to know each other. I didn't know him. We were just having drinks and we were talking about music. And I asked him if he'd ever heard of Stan Rogers. And he said that no, he hadn't. And so I started trying to explain the song Northwest Passage to him, because I love that song. And you know, I'm trying to explain how important it is to like Canada and all this stuff. And I don't think I can swear on this show, so I'll censor myself. But he said, just effing sing it. And so he quiets everybody down and a cappella. I just, you know, I sing the song. And he's like, oh, that's great. That's great. So then he proceeds to be like, okay, it's my turn. So then he sings the old triangle. And there's an Irish thing where like, they'll often, you know, look in your eyes as they sing these songs. So Glenn Hansard's like singing the old triangle, like looking in my eyes and like, this is crazy. And then I sang an a cappella song of mine, and then he sang one of his. And oh man, it was an incredible night. Yeah.
So that was before you appeared in the stage version in Vancouver?
Yeah, that was, God, 6 years before. Yeah, it kind of felt like full circle when I finally ended up doing that show and singing all those amazing songs.
Because you played the same part, right?
I played the lead guy, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. And then since then, obviously, you were supposed to be in the Chelsea Hotel, getting it coming back, the songs of Leonard Cohen in Kamloops. How did the acting and the songwriting fit together? I mean, do you consider yourself a singer-songwriter who acts, or an actor who is also a singer-songwriter?
I would say the former. I think it's pretty balanced in terms of my time between the two things, but I feel like I'm a musician first, and I feel like under the umbrella of musician, I feel like I'm a songwriter first. And I always feel very, very fortunate that I, you know, kind of get to do these different things, because there's a lot of great things about acting, but there isn't a ton of creative control. You know, you're generally told, you know, what to say, where to stand. And of course, the exact opposite is true of being a singer-songwriter. You write the songs and you sing them. Having that kind of creative control and that kind of creative outlet is so important for me. So yeah, and you know, and any time that acting is slow, it's like, all right, well, I guess I'll write some songs. I guess I'll sit on a stage and make an album, you know.
I want to step back to the album and play another track. We thought we should play your ode to slide guitar guru Kelly Joe Phelps, who is not really playing anymore, I don't think. The song's entitled Kelly Joe, I Heard You Sold Your Last Guitar. I don't think he's played since 2014, if I'm right. But tell us a little bit about this song.
Yeah, Kelly Joe, he's just one of my all-time heroes, and not just as a player. If you've ever heard him play the lap steel, you know the artistry that he brings to that, or even just his finger picking guitar style. You know, he came from a jazz background, and so it was always interesting to listen to him musically, because he had this vast knowledge of music, and then he would apply it to a relatively simple musical idiom like country blues. But he was an improviser, and so to listen to him play, he's filling up the space with so many interesting musical ideas within this relatively simple framework. And then as a singer, just beautiful gravelly voice. As a lyricist, he was almost like mosaics. He'd create these piecemeal images. And I saw him at the Vancouver Folk Fest for the first time back in like 2003, and just became a huge fan. I would drive wherever to see him. Even became almost, I wouldn't say friends, but you know, I was starting out, and I would sometimes write emails to him. I'd send him early songs, and he was very gracious. He would respond and even give me tips and stuff. And then a few years ago, when the folk collective I'm part of, the Fugitives, we went to Germany for the first time, and we played in one of these folk clubs, and I saw Kelly Joe's poster on the wall. So I asked the owner, oh, you guys had Kelly Joe here? And his face kind of got, you know, kind of got serious. And he said, well, no, actually, that tour didn't happen. And we're not sure. You know, we're not sure what happened with Kelly Joe. We think something like might be wrong. And so I was like, yeah, pretty stunned, and then did some research and realized that, yeah, he hadn't played in quite a while. And I never really solved that until a year and a half ago. I was at the Canadian Folk Music Awards, and I was sitting at the same table as Steve Dawson, who's, you know, another great, great pedal steel and lap steel player. And I don't know Steve that well, but I know that he knows Kelly Joe quite well because they've made records together. And I was like, I got to ask him. And so I worked up the courage and I asked him if he, you know, knew what was up with Kelly Joe. And he said, you know, he hadn't talked to him in a little while, but seemed like he was doing okay. He wasn't playing a ton of music anymore. He was kind of thinking about doing something else with his life for a while, like maybe becoming a forest ranger. And I was like, really? He's not playing anymore? And he's like, well, it seemed like he was maybe gonna do some more, but then I just saw on the one of these guitar vendor sites that he'd sold his last guitar. So that, and man, I got goosebumps, and I was like, I can't believe that. So I went home that night and wrote this song, and I actually sent it to Steve Dawson recently, and he said, you know, the next time he speaks to Kelly Joe, he'll share it with him. But as for right now, it seems like the music has stopped, but I can only hope that it'll return at some point.
It's a great song and a real, really nice tribute to him. This is Adrian Glynn with Kelly Joe, I Heard You Sold Your Last Guitar. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Kelly Joe, I heard you sold your last guitar, somebody told me. Man, we were wondering where you are, and I remembered in the cold when I slept in my father's car after driving 7 hours to see you play the Dreamin' Bar. It was years ago. Remember asking your advice, a song I wrote. I was praying that you'd like it. There was space around your words, and you were kind in your reply. You said you sing it like a ringer, and your imagery is fine. That made me smile. Kelly Joe, don't let it go, your perfect sound is a radio. I've carried with me when I'm down would Vince Van Gogh. I've sold his brushes if he'd got old. Kelly Joe, I heard you got a new idea to get your boots, get your cap, and be a ranger in the trees. Well, that doesn't seem a stretch, guess it's no surprise to me. And I think it's a relief just to know you have a dream. You have a dream. Kelly Joe, don't let it go, your perfect sound is a radio. Carry it with me when I'm down with Vince Van Gogh. I've sold his brushes if he'd got old. Does genius demand a ransom higher as years go by? And does doubt come through the cracks if genius isn't recognized? And I know it's not my business, but I wish you'd compromise.
That's Adrian Glynn with Kelly Joe, I Heard You Sold Your Last Guitar. It's from his new album. It's entitled Ghostlight Sessions. Now, it's available as a digital download on Bandcamp. 25% of the proceeds from the album will go to the NAACP and other COVID-related charities. Adrian Glynn's our special guest on Folk Roots Radio. We've been having a wonderful chat about his music and his acting, because he's a great actor as well. And also check out Volition, his sci-fi psychological thriller, which is available on demand, because movies have changed since COVID-19, and pretty much they're all going online almost immediately. Adrian, I wanted to ask you about what happens now. I mean, you know, you were on stage in Kamloops, everything suddenly stopped. I imagine once things start up again, you'll be back to acting. I mean, is the plans to bring that production straight back, or is that done for a while there in Kamloops?
Everything's up in the air right now with theater. I would have had, a couple different theater contracts next year, which are sort of in a holding pattern because, you know, we just don't know what gatherings are going to look like. And same goes for touring. The Fugitives, my folk band, was set to be over in Germany in October, and we've just last week had to finally pull the plug on the tour because it's just not certain enough, like, what's going to happen. So all live stuff is just kind of in a holding pattern for now. And so the focus is more on trying to write, trying to record, and we'll see with the film TV business. That looks like it's slowly starting to open with a bunch of new rules. So that might be somewhere that work starts to happen. But yeah, it's a very, very uncertain time. I mean, it is for everybody, but certainly in the live performance sector, it's very, very uncertain.
And as far as the Fugitives are concerned, you know, I've always loved the concept of the Fugitives because I love the idea that you're a folk collective. I mean, that's basically you and Brendan McLeod that, you know, kind of are the leaders of it. But, you know, since the early days, I always loved the idea that it was Brendan and Adrian plus whoever, you know, joined them from the Vancouver arts community. Are we going to hear new music from the Fugitives in the next year or so? I know there was 2018 was the Promise of Strangers, which came out in Borealis, did very well, yeah. Very well received.
Yeah, we just actually recorded a record last month and just mixed it. That's an album of kind of war songs, and I'll explain that. But we are also planning to make a new album of original, like completely original music in the fall. So there's lots of stuff happening. But so this war album, this stems from, so Brendan McLeod, my cohort in the Fugitives, he's a slam poet, he's a storyteller, and his new theatrical show was going to be all about war, how we remember, sort of what's wrong with how we remember our veterans, and how we glorify war, which is sort of almost like disrespectful to their memory. And I won't go too far into this because there's a lot to dig into there, but musically, the idea was, if we're trying to kind of change how we remember, we should look at that from a musical standpoint, which would be, well, there's all these amazing old trench songs and poems that don't land as well now because they sound old-fashioned. And so we thought, what if we take these old lyrics and give them new melodies, give them new instrumentation, and so basically write new music for these songs. And so that's what this album we just made is called. It's called Trench Songs. And so it's all these old war poems set to new music in a very kind of Fugitive style. And we hope it'll kind of breathe new life into these memories.
Am I thinking Trench Songs will probably come out around Remembrance Day?
Yeah, that'd be a good guess. But honestly, we don't know yet. But we'll have to see. Because it may also be tailored to whenever we can do this show of Brendan's. But so I'll put a pin in that for now because I'm not sure.
Yeah. And then the other album, tell us a little about that.
Well, that one we don't know yet. We got to write that one. we got a lot of writing to do. So yeah, I don't know what that's going to look like yet. Brendan and I will just have to get to work.
Well, you know, it's I mean, from my point of view in radio, you know, it's sad that everybody isn't able to get out there and perform. The only thing I notice is I am just getting great songs sent to me almost every day. You know, like your album. It's like, hey, you know, I put up this album, Ghostlight Sessions. I, you know, just did it myself in an empty theater because, you know, I can't work. And it's just so exciting, I have to say. So I'm you know, I'm all for encouraging people to get out and create wonderful music at the same time as hopefully you can get out there and perform very shortly. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Remember, if you want to learn more about Adrian Glynn, go to adrianglynn.com. There's all the links for his music and acting. The album, Ghostlight Sessions, is on Bandcamp. And as I mentioned before, 25% goes to the NAACP and COVID-related charities. So, and Bandcamp has been doing great things. You know, they have been waiving their fees once a month to encourage people to go there. And actually, as a platform for music delivery, I think it's actually really coming into its own just now. So definitely check that out. Adrian, we have one song left to play, and I think it's going to be Talking Suicidal Depression Blues, which I love because it's kind of a fun, serious song. And I actually think it's a bit like a COVID tune, although it was never intended to be a COVID tune. But I know a lot of people's mental health, and I'm going to put my own in that category, has been challenged during these times of lockdown. But tell us a little bit about this song.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. So it wasn't written. It was written sometime last year. Well, first of all, I've always wanted to write a talking blues. I'm a big fan. Like Dan Byrne is another one of my songwriting heroes. I love Todd Snyder. And of course, you know, go back to Dylan and Guthrie and further. So I'd always wanted to try my hand at writing one. And yeah, you know, I suffer from some mental health stuff that goes up and down. And I wanted to make light of it, you know, because sometimes it can feel so heavy and so serious, and a talking blues seemed like a great format in which to make fun of these what can feel like the most serious emotions and the most heavy feelings in the world, and I almost wanted to talk back to them. So that's kind of the intention of this song. And yeah, I know what you mean. I think this is a really, really difficult time for people who are feeling trapped in homes and things like that. So hopefully this offers a little levity and people can relate to it a little bit.
It's a great song with some great lyrics, and I want to encourage everybody to sit back and take a listen. This is Adrian Glynn with Talking Suicidal Depression Blues from his great new album, Ghostlight Sessions. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. And Adrian, thanks for spending the time to talk to us today.
My absolute pleasure, Jan. That was really, really nice. Thank you.
Talking Suicidal Depression Blues. Well, I woke up bright and early today. Then I woke up again a little less early. Then I woke up again not quite so bright. And finally I said, okay, I better get this show on the road. So I put on my pants. And I put on my shirt. Then I glanced at the clock. It was getting late, so I went back to bed. Got to bed early, though. Some people have sad running in their veins. It's a default setting, we were wired that way. But you can't send back to the factory unless you have a warranty. So I wrote to my folks asking if mine was still good. I waited a while for a response. And finally I heard back from them. They yelled down, "Move the hell out of our basement, please." Well, you start to think about suicide. What'd it be like if you up and died? How many people show up on your funeral day? What kind of speeches your friends would make? Of course, I suppose you could find out these same things if you just up and got married. Maybe stick with the first plan. Suicide! Well, I wake up in the night with voices in my head. Still, they talk, and when I go back to bed, voices when I write, voices when I play. Voices follow me out on stage. Never heard so many voices. So I started talking back to them. I said, "You don't deserve to be here. You don't control me. You can't control my mind because you're lonely. Nobody loves you. Nobody wants you. Nobody cares about you. You're wasting your time. You don't have any friends. Everything you do is worthless. You're worthless. You'll die a worthless piece of worthless crap that nobody loves or cares about because you're worthless. Yeah, it didn't work. They're still there. I just gave them some new ideas. Well, I woke up bright and early again. This time I did it. I got out of bed. Got out of the house, made it to the gym. Patted my back and called it a win. Then I overheard some guy say, well, tomorrow's another day. I slapped him. Woo! Well, I'm sad, and you are sad, and your friends are sad, and your family's sad. Everyone is sad about being sad. Nothing is good, everything's bad. But you know what they say. It's good to have something to look forward to. I can't wait to hear what they say at my funeral. Or wedding. Well, I'm sad, and you are sad, and your friends are sad, and your family's sad. Everyone's sad about being sad. Nothing is good, everything is bad. Well, I'm sad, and you are sad, and your friends are sad, and your family's sad. Everyone is sad about being sad. Nothing is good, and everything.